Audio Renaissance presents To the Nines by Janet Ivanovich, read for you by Lorelei King. Chapter 1. My name is Stephanie Plum, and I was born and raised in the Chambersburg section of Trenton, where the top male activities are scarfing pastries and pork rinds and growing love handles. The pastry and pork rind scarfing I've seen firsthand. The love handle growing happens over time. Thank God for small favors. The first guy I saw up close and personal was Joe Morelli. Morelli put an end to my virgin status and showed me a body that was masculine perfection, smooth and muscular and sexy. Back then, Morelli thought a long-term commitment was 20 minutes. I was one of thousands who got to admire Morelli's best parts as he pulled his pants up and headed for the door. Morelli's been in and out of my life since then. He's currently in, and he's improved with age, butt included. So the sight of a naked ass isn't exactly new to me, but the one I was presently watching took the cake. Punky Balog had an ass like Winnie the Pooh, big and fat and furry. Sad to say, that was where the similarity ended, because unlike Pooh Bear, there was nothing endearing or cuddly about Punky Balog. I knew about Punky's ass because I was in my new sunshine yellow Ford Escape, sitting across from Punky's dilapidated row house, and Punky had his huge poo butt plastered against his second-story window. My sometime partner Lula was riding shotgun for me, and Lula and I were staring up at the butt in open-mouthed horror. Punky slid his butt side to side on the pane, and Lula and I gave a collective upper lip curled back, "Ew!"
"Think he knows we're out here," Lula said. "Think maybe he's trying to tell us something."
Lula and I work for my bail bonds agent cousin, Vincent Plum. Vinny's office is on Hamilton Avenue, his big plate glass front window looking into the burg. He's not the world's best bonds agent, and he's not the worst. Truth is, he'd probably be a better bondsman if he wasn't saddled with Lula and me. I do fugitive apprehension for Vinny, and I have a lot more luck than skill. Lula mostly does filing. Lula hasn't got luck or skill. The thing Lula has going for her is the ability to tolerate Vinny. Lula's a plus-size black woman in a size 7 white world, and Lula's had a lot of practice at pulling attitude. Punky turned and gave us a wave with his Johnson.
"That's just so sad," Lula said. "What do men think of? If you had a lumpy little wanger like that, would you go waving it in public?"
Punky was dancing now, jumping around, wanger flopping, doodles bouncing.
"Holy crap," Lula said. "He's gonna rupture something."
"It's gotta be uncomfortable."
"I'm glad we forgot the binoculars. I wouldn't want to see this up close."
I didn't even want to see it from a distance.
"When I was a hoe, I used to keep myself from getting grossed out by pretending men's privates were Muppets," Lula said. "This guy looks like an anteater Muppet. See the little tuft of hair on the anteater head? And then there's the thing the anteater snuffs up ants with. Except old Punky here's got to get real close to the ants on account of his snuffer isn't real big. Punky's got a pinky."
Lula was a hoe in a previous life. One night while plying her trade, she had a near-death experience and decided to change everything but her wardrobe. Not even a near-death experience could get Lula out of spandex. She was currently wearing a skin-tight hot pink miniskirt and a tiger print top that made her boobs look like big, round, overinflated balloons. It was early June and mid-morning, and the Jersey air wasn't cooking yet, so Lula had a yellow angora sweater over the tiger top.
"Hold on," Lula said. "I think his snuffer is growing."
This produced another "ew" from us.
"Maybe I should shoot him," Lula said.
"No shooting." I felt the need to discourage Lula from hauling out her Glock, but truth was, it seemed like it'd be a public service to take a pot shot at Punky.
"How bad do we want this guy?" Lula asked.
"If I don't bring him in, I don't get paid. If I don't get paid, I don't have rent money.
If I don't have rent money, I get kicked out of my apartment and have to move in with my parents.
So we want him real bad.
Real bad. And he's wanted for what? Grand Theft Auto?
At least it's not armed robbery. I'm going to be hoping the only weapon he's got he's holding in his hand right now. On account of it don't look like much of a threat to me.
I guess we should go do it.
I'm ready to rock and roll, Lula said. I'm ready to kick some punky butt. I'm ready to do the job.
I turned the key in the ignition. I'm going to drop you at the corner so you can cut through the back and take the back door. Make sure you have your walkie-talkie on so I can let you know when I'm coming in.
Roger that.
And no shooting, no breaking doors down, no Dirty Harry imitations.
You can count on me.
3 minutes later, Lula reported she was in place. I parked the Escape 2 houses down, walked to Punky's front door, and rang the bell. No one responded, so I rang a second time. I gave the door a solid rap with my fist and shouted, "Bond enforcement, open the door!" I heard shouting carrying over from the backyard, a door crashing open and slamming shut, and then more muffled shouting. I called Lula on the talkie, but got no response. A moment later, the front door opened to the house next to me, and Lula stomped out.
"Hey, so excuse me," she yelled at the woman behind her. "So I got the wrong door. It could happen, you know. We're under a lot of pressure when we're making these dangerous apprehensions."
The woman glared at Lula and slammed and locked her door shut.
"Must have miscounted houses," Lula said to me. "I sort of let myself in through the wrong door."
"You weren't supposed to open any door."
"Yeah, but I heard someone moving around inside. Guess that's because it was a neighbor lady's house, huh? So, what's going on? How come you're not in yet?"
"He hasn't opened the door."
Lula took a step back and looked up.
"That's because he's still mooning you."
I followed Lula's line of sight. She was right. Punky had his ass to the window again.
"Hey," Lula yelled up, "get your fat ass off the window and get down here. We're trying to do some bond enforcement."
An old man and an old woman came out of the house across the street and settled themselves on their front stoop to watch.
"Are you gonna shoot him?" the old man wanted to know.
"I don't hardly ever get allowed to shoot anybody," Lula told him.
"That's darn disappointing," the man said. "How about kicking the door down?"
Lula gave the man one of her hand-on-hip, get-real looks.
"Kick the door down? Do I look like I could kick a door down in these shoes? These are Villaspigas. You don't go around kicking down doors in Villaspigas. These are classy shoes. I paid a shitload of money for these shoes, and I'm not sticking them through some cheap-ass door."
Everyone looked at me. I was wearing jeans, a t-shirt topped by a black jeans jacket, and cat boots. Cat boots could definitely kick down a door, but they'd have to be on someone else's foot because door kicking was a skill I lacked.
"You girls need to watch more television," the old man said. "You need to be more like those Charlie's Angels. Nothing stopped them girls. They could kick doors down in all kinds of shoes."
"Anyways, you don't need to kick the door in," the old woman said. "Punky never locks it."
I tried the door, and sure enough, it was unlocked.
"Sort of takes the fun out of it," Lula said, looking past the door into Punky's house.
This is the part where, if we were Charlie's Angels, we'd get into crouched positions, holding our guns in 2 hands in front of us, and we'd hunt down Punky. This didn't work for us because I left my gun home in the cookie jar on my kitchen counter, and Lula'd fall over if she tried to do the crouch thing in her Villaspigas.
"Hey, Punky," I yelled up the stairs. "Put some clothes on and come down here. I need to talk to you."
"No way."
"If you don't get down here, I'm going to send Lula up to get you."
Lula's eyes got wide and she mouthed, "Me? Why me?"
"Come up here and get me," Punky said. "I have a surprise for you."
Lula pulled a Glock out of her handbag and gave it over to me.
"You should take this, on account of you're going to be the one going up the stairs first and you might need it. You know how I hate surprises."
"I don't want the gun. I don't like guns."
"Take the gun."
"I don't want the gun," I told her.
"Take the gun."
"Yeesh."
Okay,
give me the stupid gun."
I got to the top of the stairs and I peeked around the corner down the hall.
"Here I come, ready or not," Punky sang out.
and then he jumped from behind a bedroom door and stood spread-eagle in full view.
Ta-da!
He was buck-naked and slick as a greased pig. Lula and I swallowed hard, and we both took a step backward. "What have you got all over you?" I asked.
"Vaseline. Head to toe and extra heavy in the cracks and crevices."
He was smiling ear to ear.
"You want to take me in? You have to wrestle with me."
"How about we just shoot you?" Lula said.
"You can't shoot me. I'm not armed."
"Here's a plan," I said to Lula. "We cuff him and put him in leg irons, and then we wrap him in a blanket so he doesn't get my car greasy."
"I'm not touching him," Lula said. "Not only is he an ugly naked motherfucker, but he's a dry cleaning bill waiting to happen. I'm not ruining this top. I'll never find another top like this. It's genuine fake tiger, and Lord knows what he'd do to rabbit."
I reached for him with the cuffs. "Give me your hand."
"Make me," he said, waggling his butt. "Come get me, sweetie pie."
Lula looked over at me.
"You sure you don't want me to shoot him?"
I took my jacket off and snatched at his wrist, but I couldn't hold tight. After three attempts, I had Vaseline up to my elbow, and Punky was skipping around going,
"Nah, kiss my can. You can't catch me. I'm the Vaseline man."
"This guy's in the red zone on the breathalyzer," Lula said. "Think he might also be missing a few marbles in his greased-up jug head."
"I'm crazy like a fox," Punky said. "If you can't catch hold of me, you can't take me in. If you can't take me in, I don't go to jail."
"If I don't take you in, I don't pay my rent, and I get kicked out of my apartment," I told Punky, lunging for him, swearing when he slid away from me.
"This is embarrassing," Lula said. "I can't believe you're trying to grab this funky fat man."
"It's my job, and you could help. Take the damn top off if you don't want to get it ruined."
"Yeah, take your top off, Mama. I got plenty of extra Vaseline for you," Punky sang out.
Punky turned away from me. I gave him a good, hard kick to the back of his knee, and he crashed to the floor. I threw myself on top of him and yelled to Lula to cuff him. She managed to get both cuffs on, and my cell phone chirped. It was my Grandma Mazur on the phone. When my Grandpa Mazur cashed in his $2 chips and moved on to the high rollers suite in the sky, my Grandma Mazur moved in with my parents.
"Your mother's locked herself in the bathroom and she won't come out," Grandma said. "She's been in there for an hour and a half. It's the menopause. Your mother was always so sensible until the menopause hit."
"She's probably taking a bath."
"That's what I thought at first, but she's never in there this long. I went up and yelled and banged on the door just now, and there's no answer. For all I know, she's dead. She could have had a heart attack and drowned in the tub."
"Oh, my God."
"Anyways, I thought you could get over here and unlock the door like you did last time when your sister locked herself in the bathroom."
At Christmas time, my sister Valerie locked herself in the bathroom with a pregnancy test kit. The test kit kept turning up positive, and if I was Valerie, I would have wanted to spend the rest of my life locked in the bathroom, too. "I wasn't the one who unlocked the door," I told Grandma. "I was the one who climbed onto the roof over the back stoop and went in through the window."
"Well, whatever you did, you better get over here and do it again. Your father's off somewhere and your sister's out. I'd shoot the lock off, but last time I tried to do that, the bullet ricocheted off the doorknob and took out a table lamp."
"Are you sure this is an emergency? I'm sort of in the middle of something."
"Hard to tell what's an emergency in this house anymore."
My parents lived in a small three-bedroom, one-bathroom house that was bursting at the seams with my mom and dad, my grandma, my recently divorced, very pregnant sister, and her two kids. Emergencies tended to blend with the normal.
"Hang tight," I told Grandma. "I'm not far away. I'll be there in a couple minutes."
Lula looked down at Punky.
"What are we going to do with him?"
"We're going to take him with us."
"The hell you are," Punky said. "I'm not getting up. I'm not going anywhere."
"I don't have time to mess with this," I said to Lula. "You stay here and babysit, and I'll send Vinny over to do the pickup."
"You're in trouble now," Lula said to Punky. "I bet Vinny likes greased-up fat men. People tell me Vinny used to be romantically involved with a duck. I bet he's going to think you're just fine."
I hustled down the stairs and out the front door to the escape. I called Vinny on the way to my parents' house and gave him the word on Punky.
What are you, nuts?
Vinny yelled at me.
I'm not going to go out to pick up some greased-up naked guy. I write bonds. I don't do pickups. Read my lips. You're the pickup person.
Fine. Then you go to my parents' house and get my mother out of the bathroom.
All right. I'll do your pickup. But it's come to a sad state of affairs when I'm the normal member of this family.
I couldn't argue with that one. Grandma Mazur was waiting for me when I pulled to the curb.
She's still in there, Grandma said. She won't talk to me or nothing.
I ran up the stairs and tried the door. Locked. I knocked. No answer. I yelled to my mother. Still no response. Damn. I ran down the stairs out to the garage and got a stepladder. I put the ladder up to the back stoop and climbed onto the small shingled roof that attached to the back of the house and gave me access to the bathroom window. I looked inside. My mom was in the tub with earphones on, eyes closed, knees sticking out of the water like two smooth pink islands. I rapped on the window, and my mom opened her eyes and gave a shriek. She grabbed for the towel and continued to scream for a good 60 seconds. Finally, she blinked, snapped her mouth shut, pointed straight arm to the bathroom door, and mouthed the word, "Go!" I scuttled off the roof, down the ladder, and slunk back to the house and up the stairs, followed by Grandma Mazur. My mother was at the bathroom door, wrapped in a towel, waiting.
"What the hell were you doing?" she yelled. "You scared the crap out of me! Damn it! Can't I even relax in the tub?"
Grandma Mazur and I were speechless, standing rooted to the spot, our mouths open, our eyes wide. My mom never cursed. My mom was the practical calming influence on the family. My mom went to church. My mom never said crap.
"It's the change," Grandma said.
"It is not the change," my mother shouted. "I am not menopausal. I just want a half hour alone. Is that too much to ask? A crappy half hour?"
"You were in there for an hour and a half," Grandma said. "I thought you might have had a heart attack. You wouldn't answer me."
"I was listening to music. I didn't hear you. I had the headset on."
"I can see that now," Grandma said. "Maybe I should try that sometime."
My mother leaned forward and took a closer look at my shirt.
"What on earth do you have all over you? It's in your hair and on your shirt, and you have big grease stains on your jeans. It looks like Vaseline."
I was in the middle of a capture when Grandma called. My mother did an eye roll.
"I don't want to know the details, not ever. And you should be sure to pre-treat when you get home, or you're never going to get that stuff out."
10 minutes later, I was pushing through the front door to Vinny's office. Connie Rizzoli, Vinny's office manager and guard dog, was behind her desk, newspaper in hand. Connie was a couple years older than me, an inch or two shorter, and had me by 3 cup sizes. She was wearing a blood-red V-neck sweater that showed a lot of cleavage. Her nails and her lips matched the sweater. There were 2 women occupying the chairs in front of Connie's desk. Both women were dark-skinned and wearing traditional Indian dress. The older woman was a size up from Lula. Lula is packed solid, like a giant bratwurst. The woman sitting across from Connie was loose flab, with rolls of fat cascading between the halter top and the long skirt of her sari. Her black hair was tied in a knot low on her neck and shot through with gray. The younger woman was slim and, I guessed, slightly younger than me, late 20s maybe. They were both perched on the edge of their seats, hands tightly clasped in their laps.
"We got trouble," Connie said to me. "There's an article in the paper today about Vinny."
"It's not another duck incident, is it?" I asked.
"It's about the visa bond Vinny wrote for Samuel Singh. Singh is here on a 3-month work visa, and Vinny wrote a bond ensuring Singh would leave when his visa was up. A visa bond is a new thing, so the paper's making a big deal about it."
Connie handed me the paper, and I looked at the photo accompanying the feature. 2 slim, shifty-looking men with slicked-back black hair, smiling. Singh was from India, his complexion darker, his frame smaller than Vinny's. Both men looked like they regularly conned old ladies out of their life savings. Two Indian women stood in the background behind Vinny and Singh. The women in the photo were the women sitting in front of Connie.
"This is Mrs. Apicenja and her daughter, Nani,"
Connie said.
"Mrs. Apicenja rented a room to Samuel Singh."
Mrs. Apicenja and her daughter were staring at me, not sure what to do or say about the globs of goo in my hair and gunked into my clothes.
"And this is Stephanie Plum,"
Connie told the Apicenjas.
"She's one of our bond enforcement agents. She's not usually this greasy."
Connie squinted at me.
"What the hell have you got all over you?"
"Vaseline. Balog was covered with it. I had to wrestle him down."
"This looks sexual to me," Mrs. Apicenja said. "I am a moral woman. I do not want to become involved with this."
She clapped her hands to her head.
"Look at me. I have my ears covered. I am not hearing this filth."
"There's no filth," I shouted at her. "There was this guy I had to bring in, and he was covered in Vaseline. La 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 la," Mrs. Apicenja sang. Connie and I rolled our eyes. Nani pulled her mother's hand away from her head.
"Listen to these people," she said to her mother. "We need them to help us."
Mrs. Apicenja stopped singing and crossed her arms over her chest.
"Mrs. Apicenja is here because Singh's disappeared,"
Connie said.
"This is true," Mrs. Apicenja said. "We are very worried. He was an exemplary young man."
I skimmed the article. Samuel Singh's bond was up in a week. If Vinny couldn't produce Singh in a week's time, he was going to look like an idiot.
"We think something terrible happened to him," Nani said. "He just disappeared. Poof."
The mother nodded in agreement.
"Samuel has been staying with us while working in this country. My family is very close to Samuel Singh's family in India. It's a very good family. Nani and Samuel were to be married, in fact. She was to travel to India with Samuel to meet his mother and father. We have a ticket for the plane."
"How long has Samuel been gone?"
Connie asked.
5 days, Nani said. "He left for work and he never returned. We asked his employer and they said Samuel didn't show up that day. We came here because we hoped Mr. Plum would be able to help us find Samuel."
"Have you checked Samuel's room to see if anything is missing?" I asked. "Clothes? Passport?"
"Everything seems to be there."
"Have you reported his disappearance to the police?"
"We have not. Do you think we should do that?"
"No,"
Connie said, voice just a tad too shrill, hitting Vinny's cell phone number on her speed dial.
"We got a situation here,"
Connie said to Vinny.
"Mrs. Apicenja is in the office. Samuel Singh has gone missing."
At 2 in the morning, when the weather is ideal and the lights are all perfectly timed, it takes 20 minutes to drive from the police station to the bail bonds office. Today, at 2 in the afternoon, under an overcast sky, Vinny made the run in 12 minutes. Ranger, Vinny's top gun, had ambled in a couple minutes earlier at Vinny's request. He was dressed in his usual black. His dark brown hair was pulled back from his face and tied into a short ponytail at the nape of his neck. His jacket looked suspiciously like Kevlar, and I knew from experience it hid a gun. Ranger was always armed, and Ranger was always dangerous. His age was somewhere between 25 and 35, and his skin was the color of a mocha latte. The story goes that Ranger had been Special Forces before signing on with Vinny to do bond enforcement. He had a lot of muscle and a skill level somewhere between Batman and Rambo. A while ago, Ranger and I spent the night together. We were in an uneasy alliance now, working as a team when necessary, avoiding contact or conversation that would lead to a repeat sexual encounter. At least, I was avoiding a repeat encounter. Ranger was his usual silent, mysterious self, his thoughts unknown, his attitude provocative. He'd looked me over before taking a chair.
"Vaseline?" he asked.
"I am thinking it must be something sexual,"
Mrs. Apicenja said.
"No one has told me otherwise. I am thinking this one must be a slut."
"I am not a slut," I said. I had to capture a guy who was all greased up, and some of the gunk rubbed off on me. The back door burst open, and Vinny came in like gangbusters, followed by Lula.
Talk to me, Vinny said to Connie.
Not much to tell. You remember Mrs. Apusenja and her daughter Nani? Samuel Singh rented a room in the Apusenja house, and they were at the photo session last week. They haven't seen him in 5 days.
Christ, Vinny said. National print coverage on this. A week to go, and this son of a bitch goes missing. Why didn't he just come over to my house and feed me rat poison? It would have been an easier death.
We think there might be foul play involved, Nani said.
Vinny made a half-hearted effort to squash a grimace.
Yeah, right. Give me a refresher course on Samuel Singh. What was his normal routine?
Vinny had the file in his hand, flipping pages, mumbling as he read.
It says here he worked at Tribro Tech. He was in the quality control department.
During the week, Samuel would be at work from 7:30 to 5. Every night he would stay home and watch television or spend time on his computer. Even on weekends, he would spend most of his time on the computer, Nani said.
There is a word to call him, Mrs. Apusenja said. I can never remember.
Geek, Nani said, not looking all that happy about it.
Yes, that's it. He was a computer geek. Did he have friends, relatives in the area?
Vinny asked.
There were people at his workplace that he spoke of, but he didn't spend time with them socially.
Did he have enemies, debts?
Nani shook her head no.
He never spoke of debts or enemies.
Drugs? Vinny asked.
No, and he would drink alcohol only on special occasions.
How about criminal activity? Was he involved with anyone shady?
Certainly not.
Ranger was impassive in his corner, watching the women. Nani was leaning forward in her chair, uncomfortable with the situation. Mama Apusenja had her lips pressed tight together. Her head tipped slightly, not favorably impressed with what she was seeing.
Anything else? Vinny asked.
Nani fidgeted in her seat. Her eyes dropped to the purse in her lap.
My little dog, Nani finally said. My little dog is missing.
She opened her purse and extracted a photo.
His name is Boo because he is so white, like a ghost. He disappeared when Samuel vanished. He was in the backyard, which is fenced, and he disappeared.
We all looked at the photo of Nani and Boo. Boo was a small cocker spaniel and poodle mix with black button eyes in a fluffy white face. Boo was a cockapoo. I felt something tug inside me for the dog. The black button eyes reminded me of my hamster, Rex. I remembered the times when I'd been worried about Rex, and I felt the same sharp stab of concern for the little dog.
Do you get along okay with your neighbors?
Vinny asked.
Have you asked any of them if they've seen the dog?
No one has seen Boo.
We must leave now, Mrs. Apusenja said, glancing at her watch. Nani needs to get back to work.
Vinny saw them to the door and watched them cross the street to their car.
There they go, Vinny said. Hell's message bearers.
He shook his head.
I was having such a good day. Everyone was saying how good I looked in the picture. Everyone was congratulating me because I was doing something about visa enforcement. Okay, so I took a few comments when I dragged a naked, greased-up fat guy into this station, but I could handle that.
He gave his head another shake.
This I can't handle. This has to get fixed. I can't afford to lose this guy. Either we find this guy dead or alive, or we're all unemployed. If I can't enforce this visa bond after all the publicity, I'm going to have to change my name, move to Scottsdale, Arizona, and sell used cars.
Vinny focused on Ranger.
You can find him, right?
The corners of Ranger's mouth tipped up a fraction of an inch. This was the Ranger equivalent of a smile.
I'm going to take that as a yes, Vinny said.
I'll need help, Ranger told him, and we'll need to work out the fee.
Fine, whatever. You can have Stephanie.
Ranger cut his eyes to me, and the smile widened ever so slightly. The sort of smile you see on a man when he's presented with an unexpected piece of pie. Chapter 2. Connie handed a stack of papers over to Ranger.
"Here's everything we have," she said. "A copy of the bond agreement, photo, background information. I'll check the hospitals in the morgue and I'll run a full investigative report. I should have some of it tomorrow."
This was the information age. Sign up with a service, tap a few keys on the computer, and within seconds, facts start pouring in. All the names on the family tree, employment records, credit history, a chronology of home addresses. If you pay enough and search hard enough, it's possible to access medical secrets and marital infidelities. Ranger read through the Sing file and then looked at me.
"Are you available?"
Connie fanned herself and Lula bit into her lower lip. I blew out a sigh. This apprehension was going to create problems. My involvement with Trenton cop Joe Morelli was on the fast track again. Joe and I had a long, strange history, and we probably loved each other. Neither of us felt marriage was the answer right now. It was one of the few things we agreed on. Morelli hated my job, and I wasn't crazy about his grandmother. And Morelli and I had clashing views on Ranger's acceptability as a partner. We both agreed Ranger was dangerous and a shade off normal. Morelli wanted me to stay far away from Ranger. I thought 6 to 10 inches was sufficient. "What's the plan?" I asked Ranger.
"I'll take the neighborhood. You talk to Singh's employer, Tribro Tech. Tribro should be cooperative. They put the money up for the visa bond."
I snapped him a salute.
"Okie dokie," I said. "Don't forget about the dog."
The almost smile returned to Ranger's mouth.
"No stone unturned," he said.
"Hey," I said, "dogs are people too." The truth was, I didn't give a hoot about Samuel Singh. I know that's not a great attitude, but I was stuck with it. And I certainly didn't care about Mrs. Apusenja. Mrs. Apusenja was a bridge troll. Nani and the dog seemed like they needed help. And the dog pushed a button on me that triggered a rush of protective feelings. Go figure that. I really wanted to find the dog. Ranger took off and I headed for home to degrease before questioning Singh's boss. I live in a 3-story brick apartment building that houses the newlywed and the nearly dead, and me. The building lacks a lot of amenities, but the price is right and I can get pizza delivered. I parked in the lot, took the stairs to the second floor, and was surprised to find my apartment door unlocked. I stuck my head in and yelled, "Anybody home?"
"Yeah, it's me," Morelli yelled back from the bedroom. "I'm missing a set of keys. I thought maybe I left them here last night."
"I put them in the cookie jar for safekeeping." Morelli walked into the kitchen, lifted the lid on the cookie jar, and removed his keys. Morelli looked like a real badass, lean and hard in a black t-shirt, washed-out jeans that fit him great across the butt, and new running shoes. He wore his gun at his hip, out of sight under a lightweight jacket. His hair was dark, and his eyes were dark, and he looked like he frequently traveled through places where men's hearts were dark.
"I'm not surprised to find the .38 in here," he said. "But what's with the box of condoms?"
"They're for an emergency, like the gun." He pocketed the keys and looked me over.
"You get into a fight with the guy who owns the lube gun at Midas?"
"Punky Balog. He thought if he was greased up and naked, I wouldn't take him in."
"Ha," Morelli said. "Greased up and naked is your specialty. Are you done for the day?"
"No, I came home to get cleaned. Did you see the article about Vinny and the visa bond?"
"Yeah."
"Samuel Singh, the bondee, is missing." Morelli grinned.
"That's fun."
No one wanted to see Vinny selling used cars in Scottsdale, but we all enjoyed watching him sweat. Vinny sat on a rotting branch of my family tree. Only a couple roaches from my Aunt Tootie's kitchen sat lower than Vinny. He was a pervert, a con man, and a paranoid grouch. And in spite of all that, or maybe because of it, he was liked. He was Jersey. How can you not like Jersey? "As soon as I change my clothes, I'm going out to talk to Singh's boss," I told Morelli.
"I'm surprised Vinny didn't give this to Ranger."
Our eyes locked for a long moment while I searched for a reply, thinking a fib might be the way to go.
"Shh," shit, Stephanie, Morelli finally said, hands on hips, hard set to his mouth. Don't tell me you're working with Ranger again.
Morelli and I were legitimately separated when I slept with Ranger. When Morelli and I got back together, he never asked, and I never told. Still, the suspicion was there, and the association rankled. And beyond the suspicion, there was a very real concern that Ranger sometimes operated a tad too far left of the law. It's my job, I told Morelli.
The guy's nuts. He doesn't have an address. The address on his driver's license is an empty lot, and I think he kills people.
I'm pretty sure he only kills bad guys.
That makes me feel a lot better.
I didn't actually know if Ranger killed people. Truth is, no one knows much about Ranger. The only thing I know for sure is that he's a primo bounty hunter, and he's the sort of lover who could make a woman forget she values commitment. I have to take a shower, I told Morelli.
Need help?
No. I want to talk to Singh's employer, Tribro Tech. It's on the other side of Route 1, and I want to get there before the workday ends.
I think I'm getting turned on by the Vaseline, Morelli said.
Everything turns Morelli on. Go to work. Catch a drug dealer or something.
I'll hold the thought for tonight, Morelli said. Maybe you should come home and take a nap after Tribro.
And he left. 20 minutes later, I was out the door. My clean hair was pulled into a ponytail. I was wearing sandals, a short black skirt, and a white sweater with a low scoop neck. I had pepper spray in my purse, just in case. I couldn't match Connie in the cleavage department, but thanks to Victoria's Secret, I was making the most of what I had. Tribro was located in a light industrial park just east of the city. I cut across town, picked up Route 1, and counted off 2 exits. I took the off-ramp directly into the complex, located B Street, and parked in Tribro's lot. The structure in front of me was single-story, cinder-block construction, brick front, signed to the right of the front door, Tribro Tech. The reception area was utilitarian. Industrial-grade charcoal carpet, commercial-grade darkwood furniture, overhead fluorescent lighting, large fake potted plant by the door. Very orderly, very clean. The woman behind the desk was professionally friendly. I introduced myself and asked to speak to Singh's superior. A man appeared in an open doorway behind the woman.
I'm Andrew Cohn, he said. Perhaps I can help you.
He was mid-40s, average height, slim build, seriously thinning brown hair, amiable brown eyes. He wore a blue dress shirt, one button open at the throat, sleeves neatly rolled, khaki slacks. He ushered me into his office and directed me to a chair across from his desk. His office was tastefully decorated. He had a World's Best Dad coffee mug on his desk and framed photos in his bookcase. The photos were of 2 little boys and a blonde woman. They were at the beach. They were dressed for a party. They were hugging a small, spotted dog. I'm looking for Samuel Singh, I told Andrew Cohn, passing him a business card. He smiled at me with slightly raised eyebrows.
Bond enforcement? What's a nice girl like you doing in a tough job like that?
Paying the rent, mostly.
And Singh skipped out on you?
Not yet. He has another week left on his visa. This is routine monitoring. Cohn wagged his finger at me.
That's a fib. Singh's landlord and her daughter were here earlier. They haven't seen Singh in 5 days, and neither have we. Singh didn't show up for work last Wednesday, and we haven't seen or heard from him since. I read the article in today's paper. Unfortunate timing.
Do you have any idea where he might be?
No, but I don't think it's any place good. He didn't pick up his paycheck on Friday. Usually, only the dead and the deported don't show up for their paycheck.
Did he have a locker here? Any friends I might talk to?
No locker. I've asked around, but I didn't come up with much. The general opinion is that Singh's likable enough, but a loner.
I looked around the office. No clues as to the nature of Tribro's business. So, what sort of business is this, and what did Singh do for you?
Tribro makes very specific parts for slot machines. My father and his two brothers started the business in 52, and now it's owned by me and my two brothers, Bart and Clyde. My mother had hopes for a large family and thought it would simplify things to name her children alphabetically. I have two sisters, Diane and Evelyn.
Your parents stopped at five?
They divorced after five. I think it was the stress of living in a house with one bathroom and five kids.
I felt myself smiling. I liked Andrew Cohn. He was a pleasant guy, and he had a sense of humor. And Singh?
Singh was a techie working in quality control. We hired him to temporarily fill in for a woman who was out on maternity leave.
Do you think his disappearance could be work-related?
Are you asking if the mob rubbed him out?
That would be part of the question.
We're actually a pretty boring little cog in the casino wheel, Cohn said. I don't think the mob would be interested in Singh's contribution to gambling.
Terrorist connection?
Cohn grinned and tipped back in his chair. Not likely. From what I hear, Singh was addicted to American television and junk food and would give his life to protect the country that spawned the Egg McMuffin.
Did you know him personally?
Only as boss to employee. This is a small company. Bart and Clyde and I know everyone who works here, but we don't necessarily socialize with the people on the line.
Raised voices carried into us.
My brothers, Andrew said. No volume control.
A slightly younger, balder version of Andrew stuck his head in the doorway.
We got a problem.
He looked my way.
And you would be who?
I gave him my card.
Bond enforcement?
A third face appeared in the doorway. This face was round and cherubic, with eyes peering out from behind wire-rimmed glasses. The face came with a chubby body dressed in homeboy jeans, a Buzz Lightyear sweatshirt that had been washed almost to oblivion and beyond, and ratty sneakers.
You're a bounty hunter, right? The baby-faced guy said. Do you have a gun?
No gun.
They always have guns on television.
I left my gun home.
I bet you don't need one. I bet you're real sneaky. You just sneak up to someone and bam, you got him in handcuffs, right?
Right.
Are you going to handcuff someone here?
Not today.
My brothers, Andrew said, gesturing to the two men. Bart and Clyde Cohn.
Bart was wearing a black dress shirt, black slacks, and black loafers.
Black Bart.
If you're here about Samuel Singh, we have nothing to say on the matter, Bart said.
He was very briefly in our employ.
Did you know him personally?
I did not, and I'm afraid I have to speak to my brother privately. We have a problem on the line.
Clyde leaned close to me, friendly.
There's always a problem on the line, he said, smiling, not caring much. Shit's always breaking, gizmos and stuff like that.
His eyes got wide.
How about a taser? Have you ever used a taser?
Bart pressed his lips together and threw Clyde a dark look. The look rolled off Clyde.
I never met a bounty hunter before, Clyde said, his breath steaming his glasses.
I'd hoped for more information from Tribro. The name of a friend or enemy would have been helpful. Some knowledge of travel plans would have been nice. What I got was a vague idea of the nature of Singh's job, and a dinner invitation from Clyde Cohn, who I suspected was only interested in my stun gun. I declined the dinner invitation, and I rolled out of the lot. Ranger was working the Apusenges neighborhood. I didn't want to step on Ranger's toes, but I worried that Boo the Cockapoo wasn't a priority for him. It was getting to be late afternoon. I could cut across town and do a quick drive around looking for Boo, and then I'd be in a good position to mooch dinner from my mom. I called Morelli and told him the plan. You can mooch dinner, too, I said.
Last time I ate dinner at your parents' house, your sister threw up three times and your grandmother fell asleep in her mashed potatoes.
And?
And I'd like to mooch dinner, but I have to work late. I swear to God, I really do have to work late.
Nani and Mama Apusenja lived a quarter mile from my parents' house in a neighborhood that was very similar to the Berg. Houses were narrow, two stories, set on narrow lots. The Apusenja house was a two-tone clapboard, painted a bilious green on the top and chocolate brown on the bottom. A 10-year-old burgundy Ford Escort was parked curbside. The small backyard was fenced. I couldn't see all the yard, but what I could see didn't contain a dog. I cruised 4 blocks without a Boo sighting. Also no ranger sighting. I turned a corner, and my cell phone chirped.
Joe, Ranger said.
Yo yourself, I told him. Do you have Singh and leg irons?
Singh is nowhere to be found.
And the dog? A couple beats of silence.
What's with you and the dog?
I don't know, I just have these dog feelings.
Not a good sign, babe. Next thing you'll be adopting cats. And then one day you'll get all choked up when you walk down the baby food aisle in the supermarket. And you know what happens after that.
What?
You'll be punching holes in Morelli's condoms.
I would like to think the scenario was funny, but I was afraid it might be true. I visited with the people at Tribro, I told Ranger. I didn't come away with anything useful. I caught a familiar reflection in my rearview mirror. Ranger, in his truck. How he always managed to find me was part of the mystery. Ranger flashed his lights to make sure I saw him.
Let's talk to the Apusenjas, he said.
We drove around the block to Sully Street, parked behind the burgundy escort, and walked to the door together. Mama Apusenja answered. She was still in the sari, and her fat rolls made me think of the Michelin tire guy.
Well, she said to me with a head wag, I see you've cleaned yourself up. You must be a terrible burden to your mother. I am feeling so sorry for her not to have a proper daughter.
I narrowed my eyes and opened my mouth to speak, and Ranger leaned into me and rested a hand on my shoulder. Probably he thought I was going to do something rash, like call Mrs. Apusenja a fat cow. And in fact, he was right. Fat cow was on the tip of my tongue.
I thought it might be helpful to see Singh's room, Ranger said to Mrs. Apusenja.
Will you be bringing this one in with you?
Ranger's grip on me tightened.
This one's name is Stephanie, Ranger said pleasantly. And yes, she'll be coming with me.
I suppose it would be all right, Mrs. Apusenja said grudgingly. I will expect you to be careful. I keep a very nice house.
She stepped back from the door and motioned us into the living room.
This is the formal parlor, she said proudly, and beyond that is the dining room, and then the kitchen.
Ranger and I stood speechless for a moment, taking it all in. The house was filled to bursting with overstuffed furniture, end tables, lamps, trinkets, dried flowers, faded photos, stacks of magazines, and bowls of fake fruit. And elephants. There were ceramic elephants, elaborate elephant couch pillows, elephant clocks, footstools, and planters. Elephants aside, there was no dominant style or color. It was a garage sale waiting to happen. I watched Ranger scan the room, and I suspected he was doing a mental grimace. It would be easy to miss a note in the mess. For that matter, it would be easy to miss Singh. He could be slouched in a chair somewhere and never be noticed. Mrs. Apusenja led the way upstairs, across the short hallway to a small bedroom. She was wearing pink rubber flip-flops that slapped against her heels and hit the floor at an angle, so her heel was always half off the shoe. Her toenails were massive, painted a virulent shimmering purple. I was directly behind her, and from my angle her ass looked to be about 3 feet across.
"This is Samuel's room," she said, gesturing to the open door. It's so sad that it's empty. He was such a nice young man, so polite, very respectful.
She said this, cutting a look back at me, sending the message that she knew I had none of those wonderful qualities. Ranger and I stepped inside the room, and I was hit with a wave of claustrophobia. The double bed was neatly made, covered with a green, yellow, and purple-flowered quilted bedspread that shouted, "Yikes!" The curtains matched the bedspread and hung over seasick green shears. The walls were plastered with outdated calendars and thumbtacked posters, subjects ranging from Winnie the Pooh to Springsteen, the Starship Enterprise, and Albert Einstein. There was a nightstand beside the bed, and a small desk and rickety chair wedged between the bed and the wall.
You see,
It's such a nice room, Mrs. Apusenja said. He was lucky to have this room. We have a room in the basement that we also rent out on occasion, but we gave Samuel this room because I knew he would be a suitor for Nani.
Ranger rifled through the nightstand and desk drawers.
Was Samuel unhappy about anything?
No, he was very happy. Why would he be unhappy? He had everything. We even allowed him kitchen privileges.
Has you notified his family of his disappearance?
I have. I thought perhaps he was suddenly called home, but they have heard nothing from him.
Ranger moved on to the desk. He opened the middle drawer and extracted Singh's passport.
New York is his only entry.
This was his first time away from home, Mrs. Apusenja said. He was a good boy. He was not one of those good-for-nothing wanderers. He came here to make money for his family in India.
Ranger returned the passport to the drawer and continued his search. He abandoned the desk and went to the closet.
What's missing from the room?
Ranger asked Mrs. Apusenja.
What did Singh take with him?
So far as I know, just the clothes he was wearing, and his backpack, of course.
Ranger turned to look at her.
Do you know what he carried in his backpack?
His computer. He was never without his computer. It was a laptop. It always went to work with him.
Samuel was very smart. That's how he got such a good job. He said he got his job over the internet.
Do you know his email address? I asked.
No, I don't know anything about that. We don't own a computer. We have no need for such a thing.
How did Samuel get to work?
Ranger asked.
He drove himself.
Has his car been found?
No, he just drove away in the car, and that was the last we saw of him and the car. It was a gray Nissan Sentra, an older model.
Ranger did a quick search of the bathroom and Nani's room, and we all moved downstairs to search the kitchen. We were still in the kitchen when Nani came home.
Have you found Boo?
Nani asked.
Not yet, I said. Sorry. It's difficult to concentrate on my work with him missing like this, Nani said.
Nani is a manicurist at Classy Nails in the mall, Mrs. Apusenja said. She is one of their most popular girls.
I never skimp on the top coat, Nani said. That's the secret to a superior manicure.
It was a few minutes after 6 when Ranger and I left the Apusenjas. There was still time to make dinner at my parents' house, but I was losing enthusiasm for the experience. I was thinking I'd had enough chaos for one day. I was thinking maybe what I wanted to do was get takeout pizza and go home and watch a bad movie. Ranger lounged against my car, arms crossed over his chest.
What did you think?
Nani never asked about Singh. She only asked about Boo.
Not exactly the distraught fiancé, Ranger said.
If we believe everything we hear, we've got a nice geeky guy who got himself engaged and disappeared along with the dog.
The dog could be a coincidence.
I don't think so. My spidey sense tells me the disappearances are related. Ranger grinned at me.
Does your spidey sense tell you anything else?
Is that a mocking grin?
It's the grin of a man who loves you, babe.
My heart skipped around a little, and I got warm in places only Morelli should be warming. Love?
There's all kinds of love, Ranger said. This kind doesn't come with a ring attached.
Nice, but you avoided answering my question about the mocking grin. He gave my ponytail a playful tug. I'm going back to Tribro tomorrow, I said. I'll make a pest of myself, find out about the internet job search, talk to co-workers. If it's anything other than a random murder, I should be able to get a lead. I decided against the family dinner, and instead I stopped at Pino's on